Grateful that her husband Moniek hadn't been transported with her from the ghetto in occupied Poland and couldn't witness her humiliation. Along with Priska Lovenbeinova, one of the thousands of women who shared her fate, Rachel had only a few seconds to choose how to respond to the high-ranking Nazi who would indicate with a casual movement of his hand if she was to live or die. She wasn't even 100% certain that she was pregnant with Moniek's child, and if she was, it could only be a matter of weeks. Nor did she have any idea what it might mean to admit that she was. She'd heard a few horrible stories of what went on in some of the Nazi camps, but she couldn't bring herself to believe them. And no matter how preposterous those rumours became, there'd been no mention of Dr. Mengele, of the fate of pregnant women in his care, or of his brutal medical experiments on children, especially twins. That was to emerge later. The only thing Rachel knew as she watched the impeccably groomed doctor personally examine scores of female prisoners was that his smile never quite reached his eyes. In fact, his whole demeanour was that of a diligent farmer closely scrutinising his livestock as he unashamedly appraised the physique of a blushing teenager or roughly manhandled the breasts of a woman in her prime. With his highly polished boots and crisp uniform, he bore all the hallmarks of a man who thrived on discipline and routine. While some of the fat-necked Nazis lolling around the perimeter of the muddy roll call area appeared to be drunk or worse, Mengele didn't seem to need to deaden his senses. On the contrary, he seemed to enjoy his work, sometimes whistling as he strode up and down the rows of inmates, breaking off only to dispense orders to prisoners wearing what looked like striped pyjamas. Any women who were visibly pregnant or given away by telltale drops of milk were hauled off by these stony-faced men. The women weren't stony-faced, though. The look of fear in their eyes as they huddled together was enough to convince Rachel of her answer. When Mengele asked her his question, and then impatiently flipped his glove left and right, she cupped a hand protectively over each breast and said quietly, "Nay." Mengele never laid a finger on the pregnant woman standing before him. As he moved on to his next victim, he didn't even give Rachel Friedman a backward glance. Rachel grew up as part of a large, happy and beautiful family in which the children played, laughed and sang together, and for whom life should have been long and sweet. She was named Rachel Abramczyk, but called Ruzia, or Ruzhka, for much of her later life. The eldest of nine children, she was born 1 month after the end of the First World War, on New Year's Eve, 1918, in Pabianice, near Łódź, Poland's second largest city. Pabianice was one of the oldest settlements in the country, and among its most prosperous, with a long history of manufacturing textiles. Even so, it was still relatively rural, and there were only two cars in town, one of which belonged to the local doctor. Jews in this part of Eastern Europe had experienced prejudice since Prussian rule. But by the 1930s, they had assimilated much more, and now comprised approximately 16% of the population. Orthodox and Hasidic Jews, who stood out in their black robes and hats, were persecuted far more than non-religious families like the Abramczyks, who described themselves as culturally Jewish, or as Reformed Jews, long before the Reformation movement officially started. Although they spoke Yiddish at home and celebrated Shabbat and other holy days with kosher food and candles, they rarely went to the synagogue, and the children weren't raised to think of themselves as being especially observant, although they did attend a Jewish school. Rachel's father, Shaya, was a textile engineer in a company owned by his parents-in-law, one of the few industries open to someone of their faith. The family had their own looms and employed mostly relatives, making tapestries and fabrics for curtains and soft furnishings. They lived well enough, thanks to the parents of his wife, Feige, and had a large third-floor apartment with two balconies and a large back garden. Shaya Abramczyk, who was 48 when his first child was born.